This week's podcast contains very little swearing, but there is an appearance by the absolute star of the swearing world, the Tom Cruise of Swearington, the C word. You've been warned.
I added one more podcast to the giant podcast bin. Now you have plucked that podcast out and started listening.
I took my microphone and found some human folk. Then I recorded all the noises while we spoke. My name is Adam Buxton, I'm a man. I want you to enjoy this, that's the plan.
Hey, how you doing, podcats? Adam Buxton here. Back in the woods where I belong. Striding amongst the stunted nettle population. The nettles are looking quite forlorn. Normally, actually, I don't know. If they're probably making normal progress, I guess, but they must be alarmed by this weather.
I don't like it. It's freezing and windy, and it is discouraging us from our rampant spring/summertime propagation program. We would like to expand our sphere of influence across the rural areas and also into more or less anywhere where there's some soil, behind sheds, around gardens, you know, anywhere really, bit of soil, even if it's like just some stones and all that. We'll set up house there as well, but not so sure this year with the weather.
Don't rain. Is it going to rain now? I stepped out of the house and it was a little gap in the freezing wind and a bit of sunshine, and now it's raining on my ass just because I impersonated some nettles. Oh dear, everyone's very touchy, aren't they? Hey, listen, welcome to podcast number 18 with stand-up comedian, actor and writer Sarah Pascoe. Yay! Sarah's been on all the panel shows over here in the United Queendom. And she's a very funny, silly, and intelligent stand-up comedian. That sounds quite patronising, doesn't it? Didn't mean it to be. But that's how I see her work, and I like it very much. She has acted in TV shows like The Thick of It, Being Human, 2012, W1A. I could go on, but I'm not going to, because I'd get jealous. That's actually a call forward, or a tease to something that we talk about later on in the podcast, not the TV shows. I forgot to ask her about those, but the jealousy, we talk about that, much more important. Sarah is currently aged 34 and is a cisgender heterosexual female involved with a cisgender male man who also identifies as a stand-up comedian. His name is John Robbins. He's got a much-loved radio show on at the moment on Radio X in London. And he is, as well as being a stand-up and a TV personality, and he's going to be on the podcast too at some point. Not that either of them, Sarah or John, I would like to point out, stipulated that the other one had to be on the podcast as a condition of their appearing. Why would they? It would be submental. And frankly, I would have stood up to it. Anyway, the only reason I mentioned that Sarah's going out with John is that she herself mentions John later on. So I wanted you to know who she meant. It's another forward call.
You're welcome.
Now, Sarah and I had our ramble chat last week when I was in London. That's mid-April 2016, if you're from the future. And before we got onto the subjects of juice, Play-Doh, first-class plane travel, books, jealousy, etc., there was something altogether more important, and I'm afraid to say sadder, that we needed to deal with. So, as the rain intensifies and I prepare to get soaked, I've got to cycle into town now. I'm just about to do a bug show in Norwich. Anyway, that's my problem. Rosie, come on. Let's go back, because we're going to get wet. Here we go.
First on this, then concentrate on that. Come on, let's chew the fat.
I'm sat here with Sarah Pascoe. Minutes after she looked at her phone, read out a text from a friend and asked me, has Prince just died? And I said, no, he's not died. And Sarah said, well, why is someone sending me a text saying, have you killed Prince?
Yeah, that's exactly what it was. It was the police. They're after me.
But yeah. We are sat here now. I mean, by the time this goes out, you guys will have processed the fact that Prince has died. And many of you will have been...
They might know about other people that have died.
Right.
They'll be ahead of us in death.
Probably. There's going to be other... If Victoria Wood dies one day and then Prince dies the next...
I mean, where do you go from there?
And already when Victoria Wood died, people were saying, what the hell is going on with this year?
Yeah.
And now...
Yeah.
Prince...
Yeah.
It's too weird.
It's too ridiculous. Because these are people that we thought were immortal, I think.
Yeah. You know, I'm still processing Bowie dying.
Yeah. And Rick Mayall, I think a lot of people are still really, really hugely affected and still in the grieving process for him.
Yeah.
And his work.
It's very odd. I was thinking that maybe it's something to do with there being so many famous people now. Could that be it? Like there's just, we are aware of more celebrities. And
Yeah, they could be. There's a boom time and also the beginnings of the media where you didn't just know someone's work. They weren't just in Rising Damp, for instance.
Yeah.
You knew a bit about their love life or a bit about... You see them in chat shows and interviews and maybe you feel more connected to people.
Uh-huh.
Maybe.
Oh, it's so sad. 57.
Yeah.
And Victoria Wood as well, 62. These are people who... Definitely still had a lot to contribute.
Absolutely. And also there are ages that sound really old when you're 19.
Right.
But when you're older than 19...
Mate.
...suddenly sound like, what? That is not fair.
No, exactly.
Yes. How dare you?
I've got plans for when I'm 57 or 62.
Yeah, what are you going to do?
I'm you wait.
Yeah?
It's going to be Buckles at his brilliant best.
Okay, but don't leave everything till then, just in case...
And imagine how poignant this is going to sound, this podcast, if Buckles pops his clogs at next year or later this year. I mean, it seems like this year is the big year for...
I don't want you to die this year because I feel like you're not going to get the publicity you deserve. I feel like you should wait.
That's true, isn't it?
Don't try and join in this year in case you're left off the lists of all the people who died this year. There will be people who are semi-famous who are not included in the big list, and that's a sad thing.
Yeah,
I don't want Ronnie Corbett to drop off it. There are people where
Well, the guy from the Eagles, Don Henley.
Don Henley, good old
Don. He died.
Yeah.
Was it Don?
I mean, I've never heard that name before in my life. I'm just playing along. No.
Shut up.
No. The Eagles, who are a band, presumably.
Hotel California. Are you joking with me now?
Okay, I do know the Eagles and I do know Hotel California, but I don't know any of their individual names.
Don Henley's still alive.
Okay.
Hang on. Who's the guy? There was another guy from the Eagles. Who died? This is no good.
Oh, no, it's going to be really poignant if he then dies after this. No.
Glenn Frey.
Glenn. Good old Glenn.
He is on.
Oh, so he wasn't in the Eagles?
It's on the street. He was in the Eagles. That was one of his hits after the Eagles.
Adam, I can't believe you don't sing the theme tune live.
Do you want me to?
I thought that's how it would beginning.
All right,
begin,
then.
Yeah.
Okay.
I might sing along.
I added one more podcast to the giant podcast bin.
You have picked that podcast
Now you have picked that mother out and started listening. And then I thought that was too rude.
Calling something a mother?
Yeah.
Mm. Is it rude?
Well, MF.
You worry so much.
I worry a lot.
You do, won't you worry? Mother on its own is not rude.
No, but it's supposed to be, you know, it's like a contraction of...
is it?
Mother Frungler.
Okay.
So that's no good.
Okay, well, I'm glad you dropped it then.
I don't know.
Maybe I don't care.
Maybe. Also, we're in trouble now anyway because we've probably been too flippant and disrespectful about Prince.
I know, I think we have to. I think we're shocked still.
Okay,
because it's just happened.
I did a two-part Bowie Wallow podcast expressing all my angsty depression about Bowie dying.
But that's because...
And there are people out there who are going to feel just as sad about
absolutely,
Prince.
Absolutely, of course. I know, I think they're probably dancing at Brixton Station as we speak to Purple Rain.
Well, Minneapolis is going to be a very sad...
Is that where he was from?
Yeah. place tonight.
There's a brilliant stand-up called Nish Kumar.
And sure, I know Nish.
You know Nish. Of course, we all know Nish. And he does some brilliant stand-up about how when ISIS changed their name, everyone's like, oh, cool, you want to be called the Islamic State now, or you want to be called this now. But whenever Prince changes his name, we're like, nah, he's still Prince.
Right.
People have more respect for terrorists.
It's true, isn't it?
Yeah. When he were like, I'm this now, like, Prince.
The artist formerly known as Daesh. Now, listen, Sarah, I've got you a gift.
Have you?
Yeah. And you can choose. I've got you a refreshment gift.
Oh, okay.
I poured you a glass of water, but I also got you,
a
fruit thing. But I don't know. It could go either way because I don't know if this is going to have ingredients that maybe you're against or if it's from a shop.
Neither of those are meat items.
Right.
Well, we can't say the name of the shop.
Yeah,
Can we?
I think.
Well, what about if they start sending you free flapjacks?
Well, why is that bad?
Well, you might not want them.
Yeah, definitely you might want free flapjacks.
Okay, right.
No, I don't think they will. It's Pret.
Short for Pret-a-Manger.
Pret-a-Manger.
Which is French for...
ready to eat, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so.
Aren't they? I think they're owned by McDonald's.
Partly owned, but then we all are. So let's not lie to ourselves.
Okay. Yeah. So anyway, I got you the Mina.
That's the best juice.
The Mina Greener.
That's the best juice.
Is it?
Have you had it?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's the best juice.
What do you mean that from a taste point of view or a nutrition point of view?
Oh, I know. I mean, I think with all prepackaged juices, they actually are like having a soft drink. Like, as in, they're like having a Fanta.
We
can't lie to ourselves that they're healthy.
What?
Yeah. Because all of the good stuff goes immediately after juicing. You have to have... Anyway, but that's a topic for another time.
All right. And I also got the mandarin and lychee.
Yeah.
Okay, so you're drinking now from the Mina Greener.
Yep.
Yummy apple juice with...
lettuce and basil.
Lettuce and basil. And I've got the mandarin and lychee. The label says, this bottle of drink is full of nothing. There are no weird, unpronounceable chemicals, no preservatives, and no aspartame. None whatsoever. We could have added strange ingredients to make this a health-enhancing tonic, in quotes. We didn't. It's a blend of natural fruit extracts, fruit juices, and still water. So they're being honest, and that's they're using the language.
How does that make you feel?
Of honesty.
Yeah.
They're like my friend, Sarah.
Is that the best chat you've had today?
Yes.
With that bottle.
With the mandarin and lychee.
Yeah.
Hello, they're saying. Hey, now I know you're probably with Sarah Pascoe, and she's probably bringing you down about your health drinks. Yeah. But come on, don't listen to her. We haven't put anything bad in this, mate. Yeah. So just have fun, is what they're saying.
Yeah, they are. I do kind of admire the psychology of we could do what we like with Pret-a-Manger, but we didn't, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. If we
would you know? You're an idiot. You drink anything. You just like the colour.
Do you realise that if we wanted, with the power of Ronnie McStinkles, the clown, we could kill you with just the contents of this one bottle.
We could have any kind of poison in this, but
we didn't.
Please.
But hey, we didn't.
Yeah.
That's how nice we are.
This time.
I'm going to taste it.
Yeah. Are you going to then review it for the podcast?
Yeah. It, they're right.
They put nothing in it.
Full of nothing. It's like one of those revolting flavoured waters, you know?
You are drinking squash.
It's like weak squash.
Yeah, it's weak squash.
If you'd got this squash back in the day after a game of football...
It just would have been in a glass from someone else's mum, not going...
You would have spat and going, your mum can't make squash, man.
Yeah, but she's...
What is that?
But his mum's like, I didn't put any arsenic in this or tea bags or spoons of sugar.
No, that is absolute dog shit.
And I bet that cost £1.89.
At least.
Ridiculous.
At least.
Absolutely ridiculous.
I mean, the thing you're drinking...
£3.99. I know the price of this, my friend.
That is...
Because I got superstitious once that I had to drink these before every gig or I'd have a bad gig. Right. And that was an expensive superstition for a while. But then always luckily you then do it and then get a really bad gig and then you realise it wasn't magic.
Ah.
And then you have to find a new thing.
Okay.
Yeah.
What's your current thing now?
Oh,
you used to drink booze before a show, but you don't.
Oh,
right?
Yes. Yeah, that's true. Yeah. I used to, but I was always, I thought it helped me with feeling nervous.
Uh huh.
But so now I don't drink before, but I just drink all of the rest of the time.
Right. That's the best way.
Yeah.
No, I don't drink before a show either.
No.
Because I struggle with being articulate.
Yes.
Normally,
I think it slows down some
really
processes.
Does.
But another the thing that's really nice about it is there's a point of drinking where something, you know, like the click, like the brick cat on a hot tin roof thing,
mm-hmm.
there's a real brief window where you're like, I'm untouchable.
Yes.
I can do anything and I'm a king. And so you can try and orchestrate that. Like, I need to drink one big glass of wine really quickly just before I go on. Or half an hour before, I need to have one pint, half a glass of water. Then I'm in it. Like, I would try and... And that's dangerous.
Now and then I like to stop the chat and put the jingle in. It stops the ramble topics leaking out and mingling. And if you like, you can take a little dance.
Move your body around inside your pants.
I'm moving. And now I'm grooving. I'm moving once again.
And now it's back to the podcast. Who's this guy? I don't know.
How are you feeling? You just got back from Australia.
Yeah, Australia.
Like 2 days ago.
2 days, yeah.
It takes me about 2 weeks to recover from that kind of
I've
journey.
Decided that jet lag is a state of mind.
Uh-huh. Well, I mean, you are younger and healthier than I am.
I don't think it's to do with that. I think you can't drink any alcohol on the plane.
Okay.
Which is a shame because it's free and you want to. And you can't have caffeine the day that you fly because
uh-huh.
that makes jet lag worse. But other than that, I think it's a state of mind.
But, and may I ask what class you flew?
Oh, I've never flown in first class or business class.
Have you not?
No. This was the first trip where I thought about upgrading.
Because you were going out for a festival,
yes,
right?
Yes, I went for a festival.
Do they fly you out?
They do fly you out. So they,
right.
they buy your flights and they pay for your accommodation while you're there.
So you considered upgrading your flight.
So I thought about it for the first time. Now, if you'd said that to me 3 years ago, I'd have probably spat on you and gone,
I would have deserved it.
I will only... ever be here.
Yeah.
And there is a thing, like, it goes through your mind, I'll find out how much an upgrade is. Oh, right. It's whatever it is, £700 or £1,500. And you think, oh, that's a panel show, or that's a da-da-da-da, or that's one really successful tour show. And you start kind of legitimizing it to yourself, and then you'd have a much more pleasurable experience. It's a day of your life, and it's fine.
It's
and then you remember...
several meaner, greener smoothies.
Yeah. And then you remember the world and you go, I can't be that guy. I would love to be the guy, and it happened to Joel Dommett last time, where the woman behind the desk goes, hey, you look nice. Would you like to go to first class?
Yes.
And you watch them walk past you like, imagine that. So I think you just have to wait until that happens to you. So what about you? Do you?
No, I don't. I've never been. Well, we got upgraded, me and my wife, when we were... on our honeymoon.
I did, too. That's
to
nice.
San Francisco, yeah.
Ooh, lovely.
We flew Virgin and...
And they knew you on your honeymoon?
Yeah.
Oh, that's nice.
And suddenly, bongo, first class. And it was brilliant.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. That's the other difficulty. If you start doing it, how do you go back?
How do you go back? And the thing is, the older you get, and especially when you fly with children as well, the more it transforms your experience of flying.
Yeah.
Because my thing is that... and this is a philosophical question as well, right? Like, if you have been on a 2 week holiday and then you come back transatlantic and that 11 and a half hours
undoes,
or whatever it is on the plane is pure torture, then those 11 hours of pure torture are going to be way more memorable and upsetting than anything good that happened on the holiday.
Hey, interestingly, I just read a really brilliant book about the brain, and 80% of our memories are negative or traumatic because that's how we learn. So happy things aren't important to our brain in terms of our survival.
Yeah.
Knowing what to avoid or how to deal with it better is really important, which is probably why everyone is so sad all the
time. Oh, well, I'll tell you how to deal with it.
Yeah.
By upgrading.
By upgrading. If
that's an
option, yeah.
I mean, listen... It's taken as read that obviously it's a huge amount of money.
Too huge.
And it's a terrible waste. I mean, I was talking to Garth Jennings on this podcast a few weeks back about spending a crazy amount of money on a meal. And the conclusion of that
story... What is a crazy amount of money on a meal?
£1,000.
Yeah, that's crazy. But
you have to listen to the podcast.
Okay, I will.
Because superficially, it is totally unconscionable and indefensible, right? But... The thrust of the conversation was that actually we ended up having an incredibly wonderful and memorable evening.
Yeah.
And if you're going to put a price on it, then maybe it would have been around that.
Yeah.
I don't know. But the thing is that the thing that tortures me about those people in first class, right, on a plane, you know, they are up there having a brilliant, wonderful, memorable experience. And I'm in steerage.
Yeah.
having pure torture, rocking back and forth because I can't sleep and I'm sandwiched between two giant guys or whatever. And probably most of them aren't even paying for it. You know what I mean? They've got air miles or the company's paying or that kind of thing.
I think that's okay. And also some of them, what I like about your story about being upgraded is if everyone just paid, there would never be any room for people to be have a wonderful surprise and have a wonderful time. Also, I think people who fly first class all the time, it's like everything. You must have had targets in your life where you thought, if that happens to me, I'll never be sad again. If I get that thing, if I meet that person, if I do that job, if this thing comes off, then I'll never be sad again. Yeah. And then you get it and it's just another part of your life you don't appreciate. Like, yeah, that's just what happened. So you'd be in first class and then still be miserable.
Yeah.
It's not that much better.
I just think one day I'm going to do it.
All the time, just for
like, No, not all the time, just once. You know, I just want to, before... Yeah. Listen.
I think it would have to be such a big adjustment in what money should buy. So the thing is, so you can have a life where, and I think I have this now, where I'm not poor and I was poor, but money still means what it meant.
Yeah.
$3.99 for a drink in Pret, even though it's completely affordable to me, I still know is a ridiculously stupid amount for a juice.
Yeah, but no, but yeah, but no, but.
Yeah, no.
But if it's a one-off...
Yeah.
Then you do know
but
what money means.
I don't think you can go back. That's what I mean.
Oh, no, I think you can.
Well, I think you
suffer. I mean, I have.
I think you... But I think, listen to how you're suffering. It's not fair to put a human being through that.
Yeah.
It's letting an animal out of a zoo.
No, but everyone else is suffering. Yeah. It's not as if the people around me in economy are having a brilliant time. No.
Also, one of the times... So maybe the time before I went to Australia, we... It was an empty plane and everyone had four seats to themselves and we were laughing at the people in first class.
Yeah, well, that's happened to me.
You think you beat us and sometimes we beat you.
That's right. Yeah. And it's very, very sweet when that happens.
Yeah.
No, that certainly has happened to me.
Sometimes people meet each other on planes and have nice conversations.
Yeah. Who was sat next to you on the way back from Australia?
The first flight, I was sitting next to a woman who was having terrible pain.
Oh, dear.
And had to get some painkillers from the staff.
What kind of pain?
I didn't want to ask.
Okay, because it might have been
not black.
Personal pain.
No, I think all pain is
emotional
personal.
Pain.
Yeah, could have been like, do you have any Nurofen for heartbreak, please? I imagine it was maybe head pain from where she was touching on herself.
And
the second time I sat next to a young woman with severe body odour due to a synthetic dress. but yeah, we're laughing about it now.
was it very upsetting for you?
It wasn't upsetting. Do you know what I find really upsetting? And this is terrible. I've only just started noticing when people make noises with their mouths.
Ah, clicky and sticky.
Clicky, sticky, or maybe any kind of sniffing. Like when people have a...
I'm going to go really close to my mic.
That's for people at home, that's the worst thing you could have done. I started noticing when people sniff on the train. And I've never noticed my entire life.
What's the problem with sniffing?
Once it happens, it sounds so loud to me and I have to move.
Yeah.
And then you realise everyone is sniffing around you. It's like you're being chased and you have to get off the train. My ex-boyfriend, he wouldn't ever let me eat in public. And he always said, it's disgusting, it makes people feel sick.
Yeah, well, a lot of people feel that
way. Yeah, but I never felt it. And also, my current boyfriend would never kiss in public. He's like, that makes people feel sick. he would know if I was tried to cry and kiss him, he'd feel very embarrassed and apologise to everyone. And
what about holding hands?
Yeah, I'm working up to it. See how it goes.
What about full sexual intercourse?
That's fine, as long as there's no kissing. Then it's fine.
And how did it go in Australia? Was it fun?
Yes. I really like Melbourne. It's a really lovely city.
Yeah.
They take probably 25 British comics over, so it's like a school trip, and you all stay in the same hotel.
It's my dream.
Yeah,
man.
It's so great. You could go. People take their families, and you have to have their kids there as well. I think it's difficult to
school. Invited first.
Okay, I'm inviting you. I'll email them tomorrow.
I think I auditioned for the Melbourne
comic. Not for Melbourne. You don't have to audition for Melbourne.
Do you know?
No.
But I've heard you talking about Edinburgh before and saying that you don't find the process of performing that enjoyable when you're at a festival like that.
I think I'm getting better at it. Not as in better at the job, but as in better at not suffering so much through
it. What is it that makes you suffer?
I guess I like all of the... I like rehearsals. I like the previewing that it's not ready. The bit of being like, da-da, done it. I feel it makes me feel very ashamed.
Why is that?
I don't know. I think it's physiological. The feeling afterwards is just like, it's just a physiological, I wish I hadn't done that. Embarrassment. And then,
why? So, because you feel you've exposed yourself.
It must be that. So Lucy Beaumont's mum, Lucy Beaumont, a brilliant comedian, her mum said to me, of course you feel embarrassed. You just showed everyone your knickers.
Uh-huh.
And I was like,
metaphorically.
But that was a really great way of putting it, of the whole time it's happening. If you were to pause time and go, are you having a nice time? Are you happy? I'd go, my mind is so clear. I'm so focused on this. I've worked my entire life to have a job. I can't believe anyone comes to see me do it. But the feeling straight afterwards is like just a slump, like a, oh, God, got away with another one. How dare you? What are you doing? Mm. Get a proper job.
Well, that's interesting, isn't it? Because a lot of performers bounce off the stage absolutely jazzed
punching the air. Let's
with
go
a sense
party.
Of their own
yes.
genius.
Yeah, I know, and it's wonderful.
And that's and they're the ones that don't want that feeling to end and end up staying up until 4 a.m. with crazy substances.
Yeah. Yes.
Sometimes.
Yes, they do. Crazy substances. Play-Doh. Oh, yeah. Just making these crazy sculptures. Like, can't we go to bed?
Play-Doh is... Yeah. I remember it smelling great as well.
Yeah, I think it is. I think it is just flour and water and colouring.
So it you
is,
could eat it?
I think it is dough. I think it is. Now I think I've made that up. What was that one?
Google it.
Smart putty. I should have said smart.
Silly putty.
Silly putty. It's the opposite. Smart putty is silly putty's cousin who had extra help at school.
Yeah. I'm going to Google it. Here we go. Other search engines are available. According to Hasbro, the manufacturer of Play-Doh, the product is primarily made of water, salt and flour.
Yum, yum.
Three completely edible ingredients that your toddler is likely to eat at any given time. It is a non-toxic, non-irritating and non-allergenic substance, so it is generally safe for a toddler to eat Play-Doh. Interesting fact.
Yeah.
And for a comedian, it's considered a delicious after-show come-down snack. Apparently. Now... Okay, I'm going to try and give this conversation some shape.
Okie dokie. Like Play-Doh.
Like Play-Doh. Sarah, you like to read.
I love it.
What is your favourite book?
Ever.
Yeah.
One of them. I read a really amazing book I think you'd like to read quite recently.
Busy,
called...
Busy World.
No.
What do people do all day?
What do people do all day? Well, it's called Come As You Are.
Oh, yeah.
And it's written by a woman called Emily Nagoski, I'm going to say. Is her name? Nagoski? Sounds like a name, doesn't it? Something in that realm. She's a sexologist and she lectures. And she's written a really incredible book about sexuality and mindfulness. Mm. And female sexuality in particular and things that everyone should know. And it's such a readable, brilliant book.
This is embarrassing, right?
Oh, yeah.
Can you define mindfulness for me?
Oh, yeah. So I didn't know until I read her book. Right. So because I'm someone who,
I know. I'm just checking
that you... Of
course you
know. Well, also, I listened to a really brilliant podcast, the Invisibilia podcast, The History of Thought. Mm-hmm. It's the first time I understood. So number one, there's three waves in psychology. There was psychoanalysis, which is your thoughts mean everything. If you think, I'm going to kill my father... It's probably because you want to kill your father. Let's spend 40 years talking about why you had that thought. And then you had cognitive behavioural therapy, which is the next wave. And that was much more about how you can trick yourself into not thinking certain things in order to cope better. And then you have mindfulness, which is like thoughts are just disjecta from your brain. You just excrete them. So just let them flow through you. You have a thought about killing your dad? We all think lots of things. It doesn't mean that much.
So don't get hung up on it.
Well, also just let it pass through you. When you start to look at things too directly... or to give them too much weight or not enough weight. So mindfulness is about being really, really honest about where you are and thinking about what you feel and then just allowing it to go through you. We have these feelings sometimes, and sometimes they can be really strong, but when we try not to think about them, you strengthen them.
Yeah, but that's kind of like advising someone who's really nervous before they go on stage not to be nervous. Or saying to someone, just be yourself.
No, but it's never saying not be nervous. Mm. It's being like... What it isn't doing is going, you shouldn't be nervous or you've done this before or anything logical. It's going, you are nervous.
And how does that help?
No, it doesn't help, but it's a state that you are in. So being unhappy is a state just like being happy. And so sometimes you just have to go, this is what I'm feeling right now. And that isn't the wrong feeling, it's just a fact. Sometimes the struggle comes, like, I shouldn't be nervous. I should enjoy my job. Or why am I getting in my head? Instead of being like, okay, I'm nervous today.
I accept it.
I accept it. And I think I'm not someone who's done any mindfulness, but I think that's the point.
Okay.
With being all right with what you feel.
All right. So you read this sexy book.
Yeah, sexy book. So what was really interesting, I thought, and I think what people should know more about is so the whole idea that sexual arousal has accelerators and brakes. Mm-hmm. And so she describes this really brilliantly. So you have things that turn you on and you have things that turn you off. And that with women...
Clicky noises.
People sniffing. So you have accelerators and brakes. And when someone has sexual dysfunction, as a society, we handle it with like, put more accelerators in. So with a woman saying, I don't feel very sexy. I'm 34. I don't feel very sexy. Buy a sexy underwear. Get a massive vibrator. Why don't you try this? Watch pornography with your partner. All these things. And no one ever goes, let's look at the things. Are you not feeling very confident about yourself? Does your love not make you feel good about your body? Look at the breaks, you take things away. They did all these studies where they found out things like when women have cold feet, they're much less likely to orgasm.
Actual cold feet, not metaphorical cold feet.
Actual cold feet.
Right.
So, and the study was back to front, first of all, so they did an MRI. So obviously women were masturbating in MRIs. And women with no socks on weren't orgasming as much. And they were like, oh, women find socks sexy. Women are well into socks. And they got it all the wrong way around.
Right.
And then they realised, oh, no, it's distracting when you've got cold feet. So people think they've got sexual problems when they haven't. You can't fight those with accelerators, but you can make yourself more comfortable. So her whole book's about that. And I thought that was really interesting and really important.
You recommended a book to me called...
Not this.
So you emailed me.
It wasn't just you as well, because I recommended it to David Baddiel as well. And the same mistake ensued.
Now, I think, was it a typo or did we just read it wrong?
We all read it wrong. Yeah.
So you recommended a book called Fear of Dying.
Dying, as in, because some of my friends have experienced death recently.
Right. This is by Erica Jong.
And the book is very funny, very wise, and it's about parental death.
And to make life more complicated, it is a kind of spiritual sequel to Fear of Flying.
Which is sexy.
Which she wrote in 1973.
And it's a seminal book. Yeah.
It's a seminal book, and it sort of turned the 70s upside down and made a whole generation aware that women had sexual feelings.
Well, it gave voice to them. I think women knew they had sexual feelings already.
I know, but I'm saying it made people aware in a way that they hadn't been before. And as you say, it made a lot of women... feel that, oh, it's fine for me to think all these things.
Yes, and I think it was a talking point and.
And anyway, so the week you sent me the email, in fact, was the week after Radio 4 had serialised it.
Yeah, the fear of flying, not the fear of dying.
Fear of flying, yes. And I had been sat in the kitchen one morning listening to Woman's Hour or whatever it was with this extract of Fear of Flying with someone using the phrase... the zipless fuck,
yes,
which she talks about in the book.
And also talks about in Fear of Dying. So when you wrote back to me and said, oh, yeah, I heard a bit of that, all of those zipless fucks, I was like, yeah, because that's also in Fear of Dying.
Right,
yes,
okay.
Which is why I didn't tweak, first of all.
Yeah.
I had recommended, hey, I know I don't know you that well, with everything that's happened recently, I think you'd enjoy this sex book.
Yeah, I know, it was very odd. I was like, okay, so Sarah's into Fear of Flying, that's fine. And I was saying, yeah, it was great. It was wonderful to be listening to Radio 4 at 11 in the morning and hear someone talking about zipless fucking. And so I read it. I thought, well, okay, I'll give it a go.
Yeah. As I imagine you reading that, I can imagine like a raised eyebrow, like, okay, I'm still waiting for the reason that this is the book you've recommended.
It's not. It's interesting. It's a sort of fun book. Shall I read you a passage?
Yes, please.
Okay, so she's trying to get into this speaking event.
She's a spy in the world of analysis.
Exactly. And the lady is refusing her entry because she doesn't have the right accreditation or something. And so Erica Jong, or her character in this book, writes, I'm so sorry, Zo spelt Z-O, the Austrian bitch kept repeating, but I really have not got the authority to admit you. Just following orders, I suppose, says the character. I have instructions to obey, she said. You and Eichmann, says the character. Pardon? She hadn't heard me. Somebody else had. I turned round and saw this blonde, shaggy-haired Englishman with a pipe hanging out of his face.
Boris Johnson.
Boris Johnson.
If you'd stop being paranoid for a minute and use charm instead of main force, I'm sure nobody could resist you, he said. He was smiling at me the way a man smiles when he's lying on top of you after a particularly good lay. You've got to be...
Is that a smile?
Yeah.
Is that a type of smile?
That's the best kind of smile.
Is that a type of smile?
Come on. That's the most joyous smile there is. You can't be bothered
to
get off.
After a good lay only. After a bad lay, it's just a very, like, a very level mouth, like on an emoticon.
And you can't breathe, and you're like, yeah. Stop smiling and get off.
You've got to be an analyst, I said. Nobody else would throw the word paranoid around so freely. He grinned. He was wearing a very thin white cotton Indian kurta, and I could see his reddish blonde chest hair curling underneath it. Cheeky cunt, he said. Then he grabbed a fistful of my ass and gave it a long, playful squeeze. You've a lovely ass, he said. Come, I'll see to it that you get into the conference. And then she has an affair with him because she thinks he's so brilliant. Yeah.
Oh, my God.
So it's a funny old book.
But
the
description of the ass grabbing did remind me of Play-Doh.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, just getting a fistful.
But she loves the C word. And back in those days, it was it was used in a different way.
The swearing thing's odd. I don't really swear on stage.
Right.
Now, let's say very infrequently, maybe once every 6 weeks, a couple of old ladies will come up to me after a show and go, "We come to see you because you don't swear."
Oh, okay.
Not because they like me.
Because you work clean.
I talk about very sexual things.
Yeah.
But I don't curse.
Oh, right.
Yeah. But in real life I do, but just not on stage really.
Yeah, well, it's a good discipline to have, I think. So anyway,
fear of flying.
So I read Fear of Flying with an eyebrow raised.
Yeah.
And then I spoke to you again. I was like, so yeah, Fear of Flying, it's pretty racy stuff.
Yeah.
And you said, not Fear of Flying.
No. And I felt physically sick. I felt physically sick, like, oh no, I don't know Adam very well. So it's not like with someone that you could really like, oh, this is a funny story. Like, the entirety of that book, you thought that was the book I'd recommended, is sad, and I can never take that time back.
We're halfway through the podcast. I think it's going really great. The conversation's flowing like it would between a geezer and his mate.
All right, mate. Hello, geezer. I'm pleased to see you.
Ooh, there's so much chemistry. It's like a science lab of talking.
I'm interested in what you said.
Thank you.
There's fun chat and there's deep chat. It's like Chris Evans is meeting Stephen Hawking.
Can I say one thing?
Mm-hmm.
Radio 4. Okay.
Yeah.
So I've never listened to the radio, but since getting podcasts, I've started listening to some Radio 4 podcasts.
Oh, yeah.
And they say such stupid things. So the thing I heard on Women's Hour, they said once every 10 years, there's a seminal feminist book. And that's the stupidest thing I've ever heard.
Mm-hmm.
That there's one every 10 years, that it's a regular system, and that there's nothing in between. And that's what they were saying. And they could, like, you can list it through. And that's like saying once every 10 years, there's a good album.
Yeah, it's odd.
And when someone says that, you have to go, I need to stop listening to you because that's not how things work.
I'm wary of criticizing Radio 4, though, because it's the kind of thing that you are going to miss it if Radio 4 goes.
Oh,
I mean, you may not listen to it all
the time.
I'm not
saying I think they should be switched off.
Yeah, I know what you mean. No, of course there's a load of
I just think making sweeping statements about things.
Sure.
Because what we were saying earlier, I'm so wishy-washy.
We're both wishy-washy.
Yeah, so I wouldn't go...
We love to wish and wash.
We wish, and after wishing, we wash. But
we wish we were washing.
What should we do now? Let's wish again. So I would never make a statement, like, a huge cultural thing that it could be defined in time.
Yeah.
And in a pattern.
Sure. Look, it's nuts that there's a program called Woman's Hour.
Yeah. Give us 2 hours, guys. Surely.
It's
you've got
good,
23.
It's
you
a
can
good
sleep
show,
through it, okay? Just
yeah.
give us a...
It is a good show, and they've got good stuff
and
on
it's really, really fascinating. They interview fascinating people. I'm doing it next week.
Are you?
Yeah.
Hey, because you've got a book, right?
Yeah.
So this is why I was going to ask you
I
about
I bought you a copy of
books.
Book,
did you really?
Yeah, I did.
Fantastic.
So I should have given it to you and you gave me juice and then we'd have been present friends.
All right.
That's my book.
Here's your book.
Here's my book.
Sarah Pascoe, Animal, The Autobiography of a Female Body.
Yeah.
And this is great. I'm looking forward to reading this. So on the back it says, a tremendously exciting voice, timely, intelligent, buzzing with comedic charm. Pascoe, you're getting the surname treatment.
Mm.
You've arrived.
I like a surname treatment.
Sure.
Makes me feel like I'm on a football team.
You're being taken seriously.
I like it when other comics call me Pasco.
Sure.
Yeah.
That's my dream.
Yeah.
Pasco has something to say and a thoroughly engaging way of saying it. And you've been doing press for this book all day, right?
Yeah, today, yeah.
So what's your standard line? How do you...
I don't have one yet.
Do you not?
No. So I'm in that really gabbly phase.
Right.
Where you don't yet know. And everything
gabbly
sounds...
Gabbly
Roslin. I wish and then I wash. And I just... So they say, what's it about? And I just go, oh, gosh. And everything sounds like a lie and everything makes it sound like it's rubbish.
Uh-huh.
I need to get my business on.
Sell it to me now! Sell it now!
No.
Sell it!
No!
Sell it!
No!
Sell it!
Because I don't want to sell it. I don't want to be a businessman.
Tell me what it's about then.
I don't know.
You told me what it was about when you were writing
it. Yes, yes. So I've written a book. I wanted to find out lots of things for myself, and I was very interested that there wasn't already a book about how the female body evolved. There's lots of books about evolution, but they basically look at men. And the people who discovered evolution, and these Victorian scientists... Everything was very skewed from a male point of view, and they didn't believe that women had a sexuality. They thought that women derived pleasure from pregnancy, not from copulation. And there was all of these things that were very interesting that I thought our culture is very heavily sitting atop. So the first third is about bonding and love, and the second chapter is about the body, including the genitals and body fat, and then the third one is about consent, because I thought I was going to write a tiny little bit about how, obviously, like all animals, forced sex has been part of our evolution. And then it became so complicated that it became a whole entire third.
And are you girding yourself for a year of heated political debating about some of the themes you're exploring here?
In the best case scenario would be, I wrote my book hoping that maybe it's completely readable for a 15-year-old or 16-year-old. There's no human being as strong or strident as a teenage girl, and I think that's what's brilliant about them. And so that's kind of my... When people go, who are you writing for? I guess it's the audience. But my mum, interestingly, read it, and then while I was in Australia, she rang me and said, I've sent some parcels to your house. And I was like, oh, that's so sweet. She went, oh, no, it's just pepper spray and a rape alarm because I think you're going to get attacked now.
Oh.
Yeah. Like, Mum, I think you've misinterpreted, like, everything I was saying.
Yeah. What do you think is potentially the most controversial? Do you think there is anything controversial in there?
I think, if people want to be controversial, I talk in detail about having an abortion at 16.
Uh-huh.
And there's a few things, I did some light self-harm when I was a teenager. I carved fat into my body. My editor thought I shouldn't put that in. And then I had to talk about that in the book that an editor said.
You carved the word fat?
Yeah, carved it with the razor blade.
Oh, no.
Yeah, but that's the kind... And I had this big discussion with him, like, have you ever met a teenage girl? That's what they do. And he was like, he was like, no, that's a really huge thing you're putting out there.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, I just don't think you remember being an adolescent. But then I wrote about that, and that was good. And then, obviously, other things, like starving yourself or... things that people do.
Yeah.
And so it's not that they're controversial, but anything could be picked out as in a detail. And
that's the thing, though, isn't it? Because now it's so hard to have nuanced discussions about these very emotive topics.
Yeah, but that's the advantage of writing a book, because then no matter what someone takes out, you know that if someone was to read the whole entire thing...
You can refer them to the...
But also you've stated your argument thoroughly with no one interrupting you.
Yeah.
So you can kind of justify it to yourself, even if someone takes something out of context.
Sure. I think I talked to you about this book while you were writing it, and you mentioned that you were writing about periods, I suppose.
Yes,
you write
loads
about periods.
Loads about menstruation, yeah.
Because I had a sort of obsession with the idea of periods, because I was one of these people that found out at a certain point, or was told at a certain point, that after a while, women who are close friends start to synchronise.
Yes, so it's called the McClintock effect, but it's completely been disproved by so many studies. Yeah, it doesn't happen.
What about the phases of the moon?
Well, that's the thing that is scientific, which is so odd.
Yeah.
So 30% of women are on their period when there's a full moon. That doesn't sound like a lot, but the next lowest down amount of women ever menstruating at the same time in the month is 12.5%. So it's double.
Right.
So it's this odd thing. So it does seem to be affected by the moon. Childbirth seems to be affected by the moon and lasts longer.
What possible explanation could there be for
that? Well, we're made of water and tides, so it's just gravity.
Yeah.
Yeah. But also sleep affects periods and melatonin. So if you sleep less, you interfere with your period. And so they think that the light of the moon, because you know that when there's a full moon, everyone has 5 minutes less sleep.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So there's things that they do think that our body is related to the light.
Right.
Yeah. I think it's really odd that boys are taken out of the room when girls at school are taught about periods.
Yeah, I mean, the squeamishness about periods was always something that mystified me. And
it's crazy.
I thought it was a fascinating thing that women have to put up with it, and it's just nothing comparable happens to men. Yeah.
I was researching because I did No Such Thing as a Fish yesterday, and my subject was about these... in the 20s, they had a theory that women, when they were menstruating, had toxins in their skin and their sweat and their tears, and it's called menotoxins. And they did a study where if women held flowers, they wilted. So I was researching periods. They think that maybe bloodletting, the idea of that in medicine, came from the fact that women felt cramps and were ill, then let blood out, then felt better. Isn't that interesting?
That is interesting.
Yeah, because it is really crazy that usually if someone was in pain and bleeding, they'd be sick. But women have this cyclical sickness.
Yeah.
You're thinking, for pre-modern humans, there would have been something very confusing about it.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I know.
That's good, man.
It's weird, though, isn't it, as well?
You've got, like, that's a slice of immortality there.
I think so. But also, you know, like I was saying about feeling bad about shows?
Yeah.
Then it's also just like this permanent show. And I'm sure people have DVDs and things where it's the equivalent of it, but you can't change it.
How are you feeling about the promotional treadmill? Are you going to go on it, or are you going to...
Promotional treadmill. I'm doing a live tour with literary festivals, but because I love books so much, every time they invite me to a book festival, I look at who's on and I lose my mind. Like, I might meet Jeanette Winterson.
Oh, yeah.
I might get to stand next to...
David Walliams.
David Walliams. don't get me started. I meant in a good way, not in a bad way. I wasn't being mean about David Walliams there.
Here's a question for you, Sarah.
Yep.
Audiobooks. Does listening to an audiobook count as having read a book?
I've never listened to an audiobook.
Have you not?
Nope. But does it count as having read a book? Yes, because you've heard all the words. So I think reading a book does mean the same.
But there's the act
you just read
of
them with
ingesting
your eyes. Okay.
Info through your eyes is somehow different, isn't it?
No, I think reading a book means ingesting a book, not. So hearing a book is reading it with your ears.
But there is a difference, though, isn't there? Superficially, one is active and the other is passive. I guess
that's...
I think that's how people characterize it. I mean, I'm saying this as someone who loves listening to audiobooks and who hopes that counts as having read a book.
If it was a little bit like you zone in and out of it and it's background noise. So like if you were listening to a book before you went to sleep and then you fell asleep and the next day you don't go back and see what you've missed. But you can do that. You can look at a book and not absorb it very well. That can be very passive.
Yeah. I mean, this is the thing. I have similarly intense and clear memories of reading books as I do to listening to them.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? They are as real for me in my mind
thereafter. So who says it's not reading? I've never heard anyone say that. No.
I've heard a few people say that.
What guys is this?
You know, I've just heard people.
You have heard people say it. Yeah. Did you read them saying that or did you hear them saying it?
I think I overheard it. May have zoned out halfway through. Well, that's interesting. I'm glad you feel that way. But you're lucky, though, because you are able to read incredibly fast.
Mm.
And so you read a lot of books.
Yeah.
Do you feel as if you're really properly absorbing? I mean, I get the impression that you are.
That's what John would say.
Right.
John would say that's not reading. And in some ways, that's true. If someone ran through the National Gallery and said, I've seen all the paintings, I loved it here, you would think, well, I stood in front of one and I was very moved. And then after it, I'd absorbed so much, I didn't want to see anything else. I had to kind of contemplate that for the rest of the afternoon.
Yeah.
You'd look at those two people and you'd go, one of those people really does appreciate the work and really felt it properly. And the other person is just desperate for stimulation and to never feel anything.
When I was little, you know, my dad was a writer.
Yeah.
And he read a huge amount. He loved the Patrick O'Brien books. I don't know if you've ever read any of those. He wrote Master and Commander and all those naval...
Yes, I did. I read the Master and the Commander. An ex-boyfriend was obsessed with those books.
Yeah, well, they are.
I found them so shippy.
They're too shippy,
mate.
And it's got, like, heavy...
You've got to really care about the names
jargon.
Of nets.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, I really... I finished the first one. I was done.
Yeah, they are well shippy. But yeah, you, when yeah. you were little, presumably you just had an innate appetite for
yes,
reading.
Yes, I think both of my parents are readers, though. There was always a book in front of my mum's face, and my dad loves books so much. But neither of my parents do I ever remember telling me or recommending a book. I think I was entirely left alone to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And also, I read books, really young books, when I was far too old. So I used to hide in the toilets at secondary school and read Enid Blyton. So I reread Enid Blyton until I was 15 or 16, which I was far too old for.
Which ones? Magic Faraway Tree?
Yes, because I wanted it to be real, and The Magic Wishing Chair.
I heard Stuart Lee talking about The Magic Faraway Tree.
And I was doing my stuff.
I was surprised to hear him enthusing about it.
Oh,
for me,
it was the lands. It was just the different
yeah,
lands.
No, it was a genius concept for the pitch it to someone who's never read it. Explain the concept.
Okay, so you have a normal life, you're a child, but in the school holidays you get to go and stay with an auntie and uncle, and they basically give you a picnic and leave you to do what you want to in the daytime. So that already is brilliant. And you walk into a forest, and it looks like a normal forest apart from there's one big tree. It's not like any other tree, because there's Silky and Moonface and the Saucepan Man and Mrs. Wishy-Washy, and they all live on the tree. And when you hear the whooshing sound, be careful, because that's the land changing. And some of them are very slippy and you have to get cushions or you're going to get hurt. Sometimes there's delicious cakes and food. Sometimes the land moves and you have to try and get your way back, usually with some kind of like flying broomstick or magic spell. It's incredible.
This is an advert for Squarespace. Hey guys, it's Broshak with me, Paul Broshak. We got Mike here. We're going to talk about his new MMA comedy special. We're going to talk about his view counts, and we're going to talk about conspiracy theories. What's up, Mike?
Hello, Paul.
Hey, brother.
I'm fine, thank you. I don't want to talk about any of those things anymore.
You don't?
No. I want to talk about... I built a website, Paul.
All right. Stream some fights, settle some beefs, stick it to the elites, that kind of thing.
No. It's mainly dog pictures, Paul. And I did it on Squarespace. Have you heard of Squarespace? I went to squarespace.com/Buxton and I did a free trial. And I tried some of the beautiful templates, Paul, and I typed things in. I dragged in pictures of the dogs. And before I knew it, I had a website, Paul. So I bought it and I've made some very sweet dog t-shirts and I sell those on the shop on the website.
Uh-huh. But do you still fight and stuff?
A little bit, but not really. Oh, and Paul, I wanted to tell you that when it comes time to buy your website or domain on Squarespace, if you use the offer code Buxton, you save 10%. Paul.
Thanks, Mike. Where'd you do that free trial?
Squarespace.com/Buxton.
And how sweet were the dogs?
Very.
Sarah struggles with jealousy.
Yeah?
Is that true?
Yeah, it's
true. Is that
still
true?
Yeah. Well, when I got with my boyfriend, I'd never really been jealous of a boyfriend before, and I got really jealous of all the women in the world, because he fancies all the women in the world.
Because he's a guy.
Because he's a guy. I know. I think previous boyfriends had hidden that from me.
And have you had the conversation about like, well, you know, I'm maybe looking at these people, but it doesn't mean I want to do anything, and...
Yeah, kind of. I don't think it's a hard and fast gender rule. I think there'll be couples where it'll be the exact inverse.
Sure.
And I think that there's a real difference between people that we notice and people that... Yeah, differences between how we feel and how we behave. But, like, so for instance, Tinder, which is an app that's enabling people who are single to meet up with each other, sometimes leading to sexual behaviour. My boyfriend was in a relationship with me when that came out. And that was a real, like, what... That is bad timing. This is not fair. He cried himself to sleep. Like, this is not fair.
I don't believe it.
Yeah. I've been single for all of this time. And now suddenly my friends...
How long was he single for?
Well, I don't know. I mean, he's had relationships, but he hadn't had like a long-term serious one.
Right.
And then suddenly all of his friends who were single were suddenly meeting up different girls every night. And he was, no, this is not allowed. Because it used to be really difficult to approach somebody. But now there's this online... We've both ticked each other, so you don't have to walk up to a stranger in a
park. Do you know anyone who's had a successful, quote, successful relationship by using Tinder?
People have like definitely had short-term relationships. And
yeah, but I mean...
And I think they've. I think people have had a lot of fun. And I think...
Fun.
But I think, I wonder... The chase bit, the thing like, you know, like...
A lot of fun. Wait, define a lot of fun, because my memory, this might be just me, but my memory of any casual or semi-casual relationship was not fun.
No.
Pain.
No.
Embarrassment.
So that's what I would say too. And also I think for me, I think my probably the favourite bit of a relationship is the being in love with them from afar, but not when nothing's kind of happened, but working with someone and fancying them for 2 years, that chase, that paying off, that is a good feeling.
Right.
So, and you can't get that just from a picture that someone ticks and then you go out and have a drink with them.
Have you ever ruined a relationship by being jealous?
Not ruined relationships, but I've been too jealous of my friends.
Professionally?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, my friend Cariad and I, so we're best friends from university. Mm. And a couple of times stuff has happened which I've not handled very well.
When she's got opportunities that you coveted?
No, worse, things that I've already done.
Oh, okay.
Like, so it's not even like, oh, I didn't get them. Just more like... And it's a really unattractive, really odd quality. And then it makes you look to yourself.
You're
like,
just threatened by her being as good as you.
I think what I worked out it was, so Cariad's younger than me and is just naturally brilliant. My sister Cheryl, who's 18 months younger than me, was always the talented one. So we both did amateur dramatics and she was always told she could be a superstar. And I was told I cried too much. And my auntie Juliet, my mum's twin, took me aside like, Sarah, it's a really difficult career and you're just not cut out for it. Where Cheryl was always the lead. Anyway, so I was very jealous of Cheryl growing up. So then sometimes with Cariad, I behave in the same way. And it's awful. It's so unattractive. It's so nasty. But I feel like, as in not nasty, not that I behave in a nasty way, but that it exists.
Yes,
the
feelings.
But I feel like acknowledging it now rather than pretending I'm not.
Yeah.
It's my mindfulness. My mindfulness is to go like, oh, yeah, oh, I see. I got a twinge. I sometimes, you know what? Like when someone tells you about a job and sometimes you just don't care at all. You're like, oh, cool. Or sometimes you're really pleased with them. And other times I feel like, is my face looking weird? Because I'm finding it so hard to listen to their, to their work things. It's like, like physically suffering. So now it's much easier to go like, I'm so jealous of that. That sounds amazing. And that's better for me.
Yeah,
do you ever get jealous of people?
Sure.
Okay. Yeah.
It used to be a lot worse.
Yeah.
I've been a lot happier really with my lot and more appreciative. You know, you get older and people start dying and you realize how short life
is. Yes.
Have you ever had therapy?
No. And I think it's really, I've got a class issue. I'm one of those people who cries all the time. And then if someone goes, you could go and see someone and work for this. It's like, no, I won't.
Because I'll sort it out myself.
I guess you think you're cleverer than everyone. And also I'm just so scared of unraveling anything. Like when would be a good day? Have you had therapy?
No. I've thought about it.
Yeah.
And there are times when you certainly think it would be fun to tell, to be able to express things to someone who isn't going to get hurt by it or upset by it judge you or that kind of thing. Yeah. But
they still judge you. They can't help but judge you. It's a human
being. Exactly. That's
otherwise,
the thing.
Otherwise, you could talk to a wall, couldn't you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I talked to Rosie.
Yeah.
The dog.
But you know that she is judging you and she has a podcast.
I know she's judging me, but I think she's judging me very positively.
Yes, yeah.
Certainly by the levels of enthusiasm she displays when I get home.
Yeah, that's it. She's back again for like, another session.
You're brilliant!
Yeah.
You know that stuff, that disgusting stuff you told me the other day, hasn't put me off you in the slightest. Come on, Rosie. Come on, let's head back. There we go. Thanks very much to Sarah Pascoe. Really enjoyed talking to her. Hope she's going to come back again on the podcast sometime soon. And I've also been reading her book in the last few days since she gave it to me. I've been reading it with my eyes, no less, and enjoying it very much, despite the fact that I am not a 15-year-old girl. But that could be one of the surprises that 2016... has yet to deliver. Let's hope we don't have too many more deaths, though. I mean, there will be deaths,
That's just the way that life works, I think. But don't scoop up too many more of the fantastic people that we all really love and would rather were around for a lot longer. And speaking of Prince, this weekend some friends came to stay. Old friends of my wife's.
My wife's friends?
And my friends. And Jason, one of those friends, said, hey, have you guys seen Prince playing the solo on While My Guitar Gently Weeps on the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame?
No.
None of us had. So we all gathered round and called it up on YouTube. And I wanted to recommend it to you in case you hadn't seen it. It really cheered us up. We were all feeling sad about Prince. Sure enough, there they are. I think in 2004 at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. And it's one of those supergroup situations where they usually what they do is they do quite a terrible version of a classic song. And it's much the worse for all these brilliant individual talents being forced to perform together. But it's not the case on this one. It's actually kind of an excellent version. And it's being performed by Tom Petty and Steve Winwood and Jeff Lynne. And George Harrison's son, Danny, I think is his name, is there as well. But towards the end of this pretty faithful rendition, Prince is suddenly in evidence. And he starts tearing the roof off the place. It's magnificent. But it's... like, on the one hand, it's total pyrotechnics, but it's not unnecessary guitar warbling, you know? It's completely in keeping with the spirit of the song. And, wow, it's really raining now. It's so great. It made me really happy to watch it and reminded me what an extraordinary person he was and an extraordinary talent. And the look on George Harrison's son's face is... great as well. When Prince is playing the solo and he's just grinning away with admiration and delight. It's really a wonderful piece of footage. So farewell, good night, sweet Prince. That's pretty much it for the podcast. Different outro music bed this week, you may have noticed. I composed this one. This is an original one. Well, it's retooled from a jingle you may have recognised. This is exciting stuff, isn't it? But this is probably the one I'm going to go with from now on, so I hope that's not a big problem. And if it is, I would love it if you didn't let me know. Thanks! Thanks, too, to Matt Lamont, my co-editor this week, and to Seamus Murphy Mitchell for invaluable production support. And thank you very much indeed for downloading this and listening. I really hope you enjoyed it. Until next time... take care. I love you. Bye!